And welcome to this edition of the Nonprofits. The opening music, of course, being Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer in honor of the Texas governor's huge response prayer rally in Houston, which I think has drawn about 15,000 people, if the reports I've seen are accurate. I'm Matt Dillahunty. Dennis is out recovering from pneumonia, and we won't be praying for him at all. We are happy that he got sound medical treatment and is recovering. And Russell is busy, although we may have him as a roving reporter with an interview with a special guest later on today, if the file gets uploaded. And joining me this week, we have Linnea Dally and
Hello.
Jay Davis, who's already done a rogue episode of the Nonprofits.
So, I'm a veteran now.
Yeah, you're a one-shot veteran, and after today, it'll just be old hat, and you'll be, you know, as boring as the rest of us. So, tons of stuff going on. Have no idea if this is going to be a long show, short show, whatever. I was tempted to cancel it, but we've been canceling so many lately that I just figured we'd try and muddle through without Dennis and Russell and hope that it works.
Yeah, well, I think it'll be a good show.
Yeah,
there's a lot
fun.
Of craziness.
You guys have so much faith. It's just crazy.
We prayed that this episode would be a good one.
So I didn't get to go, obviously, to the prayer rally today. There were other conflicts, including a broken car. And, you know, we wanted to do nonprofits. So,
but I met some people who are going to a counter rally.
So. Really? Here in Austin? Or?
Yeah, here in Austin. There's going to be a counter rally and a march.
Wow.
I wish I had more details about it.
I wish they had told us a couple weeks ago that they were planning that. Because I actually was contacted. There's a news article up that quotes me because somebody contacted me saying, hey, what's the Austin group doing in response to this? And I was like, nothing. You know, I know some of them are driving down to Houston, but I'm not aware of any, you know, official activities in Austin. So I wish I would have known. I could have told them. So last week there was no show because I was at the Oklahoma Freethought Convention, which was just awesome. It was their first convention. It was easily the best first convention I've ever been to. They had like 318 people, I believe, show up, and it was at a Unitarian Universalist church. It was a one-day thing.
How apropos.
Yeah. Saturday from about noon till, I think we ran long. I think it was scheduled to be till about 6, but I don't even think I got done talking until maybe 6:15, 6:30, and then we had the meet and greet and everything else. But
sounds like fun.
That actually sounds like a pretty good turnout for
it's amazing.
Tulsa.
I think it took, I think the Texas Freethought Convention had about that many the second year in San Antonio, and more than that this past year in Dallas. This year's Texas Freethought Convention, which I'll talk about in a couple minutes, is going to be huge. But to get the Oklahoma stuff out of the way, I think there's going to be video posted online, if it hasn't already, by both Aaron Ra, who was there with me, and the Thinking Atheist, Seth, recorded all of it as well. It was really good. There were one, two, three, four, there were five speakers. Bill and he's going to be so upset because I finally get to meet him. I've forgotten his last name. I don't have the sheet in front of me. He used to be at Oral Roberts University, and so gave us a little insight on Oral and talked a little bit about a few other things. Abigail Smith, I think, from ERV blog, came in and talked about vaccination. It was awesome.
Good.
She's always amazing, and we had a great time at the Texas Freethought Convention. But this was really cool because the rest of us were talking about atheism, activism, whatever else. And she came in and educated people on something that everybody should and could easily understand, but not enough people do. Basically about B cells and antibodies and herd immunity and things like that. It was probably in a group where we're largely preaching to the choir. It was the most informative of the talks that were there.
Sounds like the general vibe there was pretty positive.
Yeah, I think everybody had a great time. The Amazing Atheist came out for kind of his first public... he's out in his personal life, but he's never shown himself on his videos and things like that. And Seth was amazing. He did an interview with me earlier in the day and then did his talk, and it was just entertaining and enjoyable. R&R was as good as always, and then I went up and did, you know, what I do, talked a little bit about my goals towards getting a secular network. So we have more secular programming, not just an atheist network, but critical thinking, skepticism, everything that I would have hoped that Discovery and Science and those other networks had been before they kind of teetered over an edge a little bit.
Oh, sounds like you had an awesome time.
I did, and I'm very grateful for the invite up there and all the people who showed up. If you didn't get to go, they're already talking about doing another one, and you have an opportunity upcoming here in Texas, because the Texas Freethought Convention is joining forces with Atheist Alliance America this year, which is the American branch that has kind of split off from Atheist Alliance International so that they can, you know, better focus between the two of them. The website is TexasFreethoughtConvention.com, and really quickly, speaker list so far, Richard Dawkins is going to be there and is going to be giving the Atheist Alliance Richard Dawkins Award to Christopher Hitchens if he's well enough to appear. Otherwise, he'll just, you know, accept absent. But Elizabeth Cornwell, who is the executive director of the U.S. branch of the Richard Dawkins Foundation, is going to be there as well. Eugene Scott, P.Z. Myers, Daryl Ray, Vic Stinger, John Faircloth, Sigavu Hutchinson, and I apologize if I butchered your name, Michael Shermer, and then Terry McDonald, Stacey Gonzalez, Todd Stifel, Aaron Ra, Richard Haynes, also known as Brother Richard, Sansara Taylor, Graydon Square, and me.
That's a total who's who. What are the dates on that again?
It is October. Oh, boy, they didn't put it right on the top of the sheet. It is at the Hyatt Regency Houston, 1200 Louisiana Street, Houston, Texas, 77002, October 7th through 9th this year.
Cool.
They've already sent out notices. You can register. I think they have, within the first couple of days of registration going live, booked 40% of their allotted space. So if you're wanting to go, you better get in there quick.
Texas, yeah, get on that.
TexasFreethoughtConvention.com.
Looks like October is shaping up to be a busy month for you guys.
It is. And thank you for the segue, because as Linnea reminded me, October 1st is the Atheist Community of Austin Bat Cruise.
You can always find out. a fun event.
It is. I mean, you know, we take a boat, we go out on the river for a little while, you know, drink, snack, visit, and watch bats fly overhead and hope that you don't get guanoed on. And if guanoed, you know, isn't a verb, it should be.
You can make it a verb. Poetic license.
But that's happening October 1st. Then October 30th is an event that most of you, unfortunately, aren't invited to, but some of you are, and that's mine and Beth's wedding. And then the following weekend, Russell and Linnea are getting married. So it's
That's coming up.
Yeah. So pretty soon the nonprofits will be just full of old married people.
But for those 2 weeks, Austin Atheists will be partying.
Yeah.
We will party.
So nonprofits are going to be really sketchy for about a month and a half or so as we have weddings and prepare for weddings and recover from weddings and honeymoons and other things like that. But so we got tons of little news things. I don't know if you guys brought anything in specifically you wanted to start with.
Well, I want to start with Rick Perry and his day of prayer.
Go for it.
Yeah, that's obviously the rhino, the big white rhino in the room, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if someone else wants to go, I've got a more practical angle.
A practical angle on Rick Perry's prayer thing?
Yes, if there could be such a thing.
Take it.
Well, I mean, okay, well, I guess I'll start with at the top. So as a lot of you probably already know, today is the day that Rick Perry has decided to engage in an elaborate rain dance.
There was singing, too.
Was there singing?
They were live streaming this, and Beth and I caught some singing
Why don't you tell us, you know, what was going on with it?
Well, I saw bits and pieces of the live stream this morning while I was doing five or six other things. For those who don't know, the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, who has previously called for Texans to pray for rain, and we are still incurring one of the longest and serious, most serious droughts in Texas history. So we saw how effective prayer was, and he thought we should give it another go for bigger problems, because if it doesn't work for little things like rain, we really need to reach out to God for all the things that he admits, for that Rick Perry admits that he can't fix.
Well, that's how rain dances get more elaborate. They don't work well enough the first time, so you have to do it again a second time better.
Yeah.
So his 3 days of prayer last time, he didn't do the praying right.
That's absolutely perfect, by the way.
That's why he had to do it again. The previous prayer was in April 24th. 22nd through 24th.
Yeah.
This time it includes fasting.
Yeah, I actually hadn't thought of it in that context, and you're absolutely right. This is, in every way, the formation of a rain dance. We pray, and it doesn't work. We change the prayer, and it doesn't work. We pray, and it seems to work. And so this becomes the new standard. This becomes the new rain dance. Yep. And so the next time we try to repeat those exact steps, and if it works, great, we did it right. And if it doesn't, well, then obviously we messed something up.
Exactly.
This kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great point. Even when I was in college down at Texas State in San Marcos, even though it wasn't with my major, one of my favorite classes was an anthropology class called Magic, Ritual, and Religion. It hits it right on the, and how so many of those practices are still evident in modern day analogs.
Yeah, it's right down to lucky bowling shirts and lucky socks. You know, hey, this is what I wore when something good happened, so I'm going to wear it again with the expectation that something good will happen.
Yeah.
So definitely. Rick Perry is already, I think he's already given his talk, speech, prayer thing.
Yes.
I find it interesting. It's not a big surprise, but hey, he was not introduced as the governor. He was introduced simply as Rick Perry from Austin. And I think among other things that he said there, he said, as a nation, we've forgotten who made us, who protects us, and who blesses us. And he's basically decrying the current state of the nation, which it seems like pastors and religiously influenced politicians have been doing ever since I've been alive.
Yeah.
Probably before.
Yep.
And I think it touches on probably one of the bigger problems I have with Christianity, which is just more or less constantly in conflict with the state of man and putting down humanity in general.
Absolutely.
Too true.
And, you know, when I the bits and pieces that I've heard from what Rick Perry said, now obviously we're all expecting him to make a bid for the Republican nomination for the president of the United States.
The writing's certainly on the wall for that.
This to me seems like, I don't want to say that this is the necessary precursor to this. I think it's a test bed for it, to reach out to the base and see what kind of to a particular base and see what kind of reaction he gets. I think they got 15,000 people or so down there, which is a little less than what I had heard they were expecting. Should have, I guess, rented out half of Reliant Stadium or something. But he said, like all of you, I love this country deeply. Indeed, the only thing you love more is the living Christ. I found the phrasing there kind of funny. The only thing you love more, you know.
Yeah, and trying to be technically correct.
Not I love more or we love more.
Well, he can't. It's you. He can't endorse. He doesn't want to say that he's endorsing it, so he's trying to do a dance around it.
Well, he goes on to, he gave his view of a personal God who is a wise God, and he's wise enough not to be affiliated with any political party. Boy, isn't that a clever way?
Well, he started out as a Democrat.
Well, yeah. Isn't that a clever way of kind of positioning yourself as seemingly bipartisan and not beholden to a particular group? And
politically, he's no slouch. I mean, he knows how to play it. He's an old hand by this time.
Yeah, he wants the Tea Party people, too.
Yeah, and his prayer included the following. Father, our heart breaks for America. We see discord at home. We see fear in the marketplace. We see anger in the halls of the government. And as a nation, we've forgotten who made us, who protects us, who blesses us. And for that, we cry out for your forgiveness. Father, we pray for our president, that you would impart your wisdom upon him, that you would guard his family.
Break his teeth, O Lord.
You call us to repent, Lord, and this day is our response. Which to me, really is telling.
You should pray for wisdom for himself.
Well, that would be nice, especially since he started this ostensibly about there are problems that we can't fix.
Speaking of problems that we can't fix, that's kind of the more practical angle I wanted to go on, which, being a dirty hippie, I know a lot about the water situation here around Austin. And Austin is really wasteful when it comes to water, surprisingly, even though we're such a hippie city. This is from Save Our Springs.
I like the term green myself.
Instead of dirty hippie?
A little bit, yeah.
I took a shower today. Not that dirty. All right. Not that green. All right, so I'm, as a green person, like in Star Trek, we use 185 gallons per person, and the state of Texas has a goal of 140. So we're 45 gallons per person over, you know, a recommended quota.
And how much time? 185 gallons per person?
Day.
Per day?
Per day.
There's no way I use 185 gallons of water a day.
It's not that you are using all that water.
Sure, it's on average.
It's on average, yeah. And it
and
also...
And it considers people washing cars.
People washing cars.
Restaurants. Your commercial use of water, too. And then I think it divides it among the whole population.
Yeah, it's an average. Averages okay. aren't that great at, you know, doing... It's not a median, or it's not a mode, sorry, but, yeah. And in light of that, we're actually adding a new water treatment plant so that we can use even more water, even though we're already using way more water than we should be doing. And this has been something that kind of environmentalists have been fighting against because... We're being so wasteful with water, and especially in the middle of a drought, it seems like that would be a good time to instead put in place some conservation ordinances and, you know, better practical solutions. So there are practical solutions that Rick Perry could be doing to help out the drought, at least locally in Austin, and he's choosing not to do them.
He could be encouraging people to shower together. Personally, I think co-showering is probably the solution to our drought problem in Texas.
All right, well, no argument here.
I have a website, coshowering.com. Just come sign in. You can come take a shower with me. See you.
Awesome.
Sounds like fun.
And feel good about being green or a hippie, but you won't be dirty.
All right, well.
Well, if it would rain more, we could actually, like, encourage the outdoor showers, the rain collection showers that you'd use while you were camping. And we actually have a porch at our office that's got a picnic table and everything. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys who bikes in every day, I was like, wouldn't it be great if we could actually get rain so you could set up one of those rain showers right out on our porch and just, you know, shower after you come in? And so who knows? If we actually get some rain, that might happen.
San Antonio is actually, they have a lot of good, we should be following San Antonio's example, really. So, I don't want to go into the specifics, but there are practical solutions.
Of the 109 lakes sorry, in the central Texas area, they're 73% full, down 13% from a year ago, and only 41 of them were at 85% capacity or fuller. I believe the last numbers I saw for like Lake Travis was like down 36 feet or something.
I don't keep track of the percents, but I will believe that. We're...
And that report was from the beginning of July, and I don't think we've had any rain at all in July, have we?
I had, like, 5 minutes of rain.
Virtually none.
Oh, that's right. Beth was driving me to the airport. Beth was driving me to the airport on Friday, and a few drops started hitting the windshield, and I said, look, honey, it's raining. And before I could finish the sentence, it had dried up and had stopped. It was really bad.
I got flooded outside of PetSmart.
So we had a surprise guest person walk into the room who wasn't going to be participating. Do you want to cover this since it's like your favorite story?
Warren Jeffs got convicted! Woo! I wish he would fry, but he won't.
Give them some context.
Warren Jeffs is the current prophet of the FLDS, Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints Church, that practices polygamy, and he was convicted of raping 12 and 14-year-olds and impregnating, I think, the 14-year-old. and he audio taped this, and that was played in court. Did he audio tape him raping her, he audio taped him giving a talk to all his young wives about how they should better please him sexually and how they should shave their pubes.
Wow.
It didn't take very long to convict him.
I should hope.
Yeah, I think he pretty much set himself up as a colossal pervert. One of the funnier things about the case, if any of this is funny, this part I found funny. He dismissed his lawyers and represented himself.
Okay.
Yeah, that's always a sign that it's going south.
I'm sure he could appeal on the basis of incompetent counsel. But actually, I think you forgo that if you get rid of your counsel to do that. The other thing was his closing. He had 30 minutes to make closing remarks, and he evidently stood there stock still and quiet for all but a couple of seconds of the 30 minutes where he just said, "I am peace," and that was it.
He also, in his opening remarks, I do believe, threatened that anybody who goes against the prophet is in danger of hellfire.
Particularly the judge.
Yes. Wow. It threatening the jury, too.
How long did they deliberate on that?
Was it 3 hours? Yeah, I think it was 3 hours.
I'm surprised it didn't take that long.
That's pretty short. It was probably over lunch, too.
Yeah, there's no way. Yeah. I mean, you know, you hear about jury deliberations. And by the way,
my former
roommate just got his jury duty notice today. So you hear about them, and you're watching the case, and you realize that, by and large, you're instructed not to make up your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you're supposed to, when deliberations start, consider all the evidence, and you're not supposed to do the, okay, let's take an early vote to see, you know, all right, how many of us are starting off with a guilty verdict
bias
here?
Yeah.
So you discuss all the evidence, and when you feel you're ready, the foreman will instruct everybody to, you know, if they're ready to vote guilty or not guilty, or if they have any comments. Probably what happened was they sat around, went over the evidence, allowed everybody to get their say-so in on what they thought about it, and then voted. And I still don't know why that took more than 20 or 30 minutes. But maybe they sit around in the room saying, you know, if we go back in too quick,
we
might give
good.
Him a reason to appeal. So let's sit in here for a couple hours and we'll, you know, like play Pong or something. Because I don't think they have internet access, so they have to use the old consoles. But
yeah, I mean, those crazy people, they just feel like they're entitled to this and they don't have to treat other people like people. And I'm glad that this finally came to justice.
Yeah, because he was convicted of rape before, Alyssa Wall, if you know that story.
I didn't.
And, yeah, she wrote a book. It's really good. Everybody should read it, Stolen Innocence by Alyssa Wall. But that conviction was overturned based on some technicality bullshit. So he'd been sitting in jail waiting for other charges, and Texas finally got him. So Utah and Colorado, Arizona, they don't do shit about the polygamist in their midst. They really don't. Because this has been going on for years.
To be fair, I mean, I don't want to diss polygamists, because that wasn't the thing that he was that was bad. It was the rapist part and the
and the underage thing.
And the underage thing.
Yeah, well, focused on the polygamy and, oh, we can't get into people's religious business, that they won't go after the underage stuff. That's the problem.
Yeah, by claiming that they're, I mean, this isn't just like polyamorous people, which I know a lot of polyamorous people, by trying to claim that not only polyamorous, but polygamy as tied to their religion, it sets up this barrier to even beginning to investigate it, because any attempt to investigate starts to look like religious persecution, because that's what they claim.
Well, I mean, they can claim that all they want, but that's just bullshit.
I think the prosecutor in this case made a really good point when he was talking to the jury to say this isn't about religion or Mormons or FLDS or anything else. This is about Warren Steed Jeffs raping little girls. And that's exactly what it was about. I think the max penalty that he can receive is life. Kind of hope he gets it, personally.
It was Texas. He's got a shot at it.
I'm sure he'll be well treated
in prison, too.
Mm.
Good luck, buddy.
Well,
he won't be put in general population.
Yeah, there may be considerable risk of putting somebody like him in general population. So he may get the cushiers, but at least we can keep him from raping any more little girls. Okay, no. Beth's going to Hobby Lobby. We wanted to make sure that all the fans of the nonprofits knew that she's leaving now to go to Hobby Lobby. Go, girl! She's working on crafty stuff for our wedding, so.
She got the important news bit in.
Yeah, she is excused from participation today with my blessing. Thank you, sweetie.
Obviously, I think the result of that trial is good news, but I kind of think about what the implications are for religion at large and state of religion in America. Clearly, you know, not every Christian or theist or Mormon out in our country is engaged in that level of criminal activity, or moral depravity. So I don't think we don't want to paint with too broad a brush. And I think he's obviously an outlier, and we have weirdos like him, and you know that guy that kidnapped Elizabeth Smart. You know, is obviously religiously deluded. But I think you know, what role does religion in society play in you know, in regards to these outliers that wind up committing horrible crimes?
And for me, I think I can answer the role that it plays to some extent.
Sure.
Because within the FLDS Church, within Mormonism, there are doctrines that seem to support certainly polygamy, but potentially the attainment of younger brides. However, not everybody practices it that way, not everybody sees it that way, and this isn't even representative. It's certainly not representative of everybody who's a Mormon, but it's also not necessarily representative of everybody who's FLDS. However, the role that religion plays is to protect those people. We talked about it over and over again. The liberal believers, the moderate believers, the ones who, you know, God is something in their lives that doesn't necessarily affect all their decisions and, you know, they're you know, not having it impact their relationships with other people negatively all the time. They still adhere to and support the same holy books, the same sorts of beliefs. They still identify with the same labels, and so those beliefs tend to serve as a roadblock, a barrier, or some sort of protective mechanism for the more fundamentalist sects. Now, there's a solution to this, and it's for religious people to get up off of your ass and do the complaining that the non-religious people are doing and repeatedly, forcefully, explicitly excommunicate these people and say they don't represent us. They have, you know, they have perverted our beliefs. They shouldn't even get to use our label, you know.
But they haven't perverted the beliefs because frequently it's endorsed.
And that's the problem.
Yeah.
You can't get religious people to say that the Westboro Baptist Church are perverting Christianity if they're on more sound biblical footing than the gay Presbyterian church down the street.
Exactly.
Yep, that's true.
And as long as that's the case, and it will be the case until these people depart and come up with a new label and a new list of tenets and ideas that divorce themselves from any link to the Bible, the Book of Mormon, the Quran, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm.
Well, in speaking of protecting children, the Catholic Church Child Protection Chief was caught with 4,000 child porn pictures. And this is from themirror.co.uk. He was arrested after uploading pictures of children being abused to a website. So he's supposed to be the guy that's protecting the children. And he's obviously just taking advantage of the position. I cannot believe how far the Catholic Church is digging its own grave with this, just continuing to do it and not caring about it, and just continuing to try and cover it up, and just allow these kinds of peoples to represent them.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate to hear, but I'm almost numb to it when I hear, you know, something about the Catholic Church involving either child pornography or child rape.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they did it again.
Yeah, which is sad. And, you know, and I think and in that case with the Catholic Church, that's obviously not an outlier. That's obviously something systemic and deeply rooted, that hopefully that they're doing something about it, but it doesn't seem like it's ever enough. But when things like this come up, obviously the media now seizes on that, and it's not going to go unreported. So they don't get a free pass on that like they did for many, many years anymore.
That's true. I am glad that they're not getting that kind of free pass anymore.
But I sometimes even wonder how the Catholic Church has even weathered and survived that. I mean, it's such a horrible scandal and part of their, you know, and it's obviously so intrinsically ingrained. But they have been around for thousands of years, so I guess
they have a really strong authority system set up that you're not supposed to question the authority.
And it's still a very strong base, too, of people around the world.
Especially with poor people.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, they just kind of latch on to that.
Latin America, big
yeah,
time.
Yeah, and they just latch on to these people who have no other hope, and they just say... They just say from this position of authority that this is how it is and don't give them any kinds of access to real education. And so they just believe it, even when this kind of stuff happens. So, pretty ridiculous.
So I've received the file of the recorded interview. Unfortunately, it's not going to play on my laptop till I get a converter. So here's what I think we ought to do. There was something I wanted us all to discuss, and I'm going to read two bits. Kind of summarized. I won't read the whole thing, and let you guys start discussing it while I chime in. For those who don't know, American Atheists is suing over the cross girder memorial thing being added to the Memorial Museum.
For the World Trade Center?
Yeah, when the World Trade Center's were destroyed by planes that flew into them and then started fires, which caused them to collapse. Boy, I just pissed somebody off.
yeah, the truthers.
When we got around to clearing the rubble, there was a particular T-shaped girder, which some people looked at and saw as a symbol of Christianity. And it was significant. It was pictured all over the place. People drew hope from it or whatever. It had no significance to the event or to, obviously, the non-Christians or anything else. It was moved, to my understanding, to a church for a while and is now being moved into the museum. An American Atheist has filed suit, basically claiming that this violates the Establishment Clause as... seemingly a government endorsement of religion, to have this thing displayed prominently there, unless, and they're basically demanding that either symbols for other religious groups, all other religious groups and non-religious groups be added as well, or that this not be put up in there.
Yeah, well, good luck finding any girders that were in the shape of the Star of David.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
or
a crescent moon and star.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So I wrote a piece really quickly that I posted on Facebook in support of the lawsuit. There's a number of lawsuits that have gone on where I haven't always agreed. This is one that I agreed with and posted about it. And what I wrote, kind of summarize, was that I wish it wasn't necessary to sue over such a contentious and polarizing issue, because as soon as you step into 911, you're going to piss people off. But that's sort of the point. This shouldn't be a polarizing issue, but some fans of a particular religion have seen fit to make it so. This could be and should be an American memorial. If the girders had formed in an approximation of the Star of David, would this be happening? If someone had seen the name of Allah in the rubble, would this be happening? Of course not. This is another example of Christians trying to Christianize something that they have no claim over. And if the government permits it, that's a problem. It's bad enough that we're prone to seeing things in a way that fits our worldview, but it's particularly annoying that Christians have such a simplistic T-shaped icon that they can see anywhere. I support our American Atheist lawsuit, and here's why. Number one, there's a Decalogue monument on the lawn of the Texas Capitol, and the only reason that it wasn't removed was that Justice Breyer invented a grandfather clause, basically claiming that it could stay because no one had really complained about it for the first 50 years that it was there. The clear message here is that we have to complain. Yes, the grandfather clause was nonsense, but now it's precedent, and we can't risk further misuses of precedent. Mm-hmm. Number two, when the government allows Christians to co-opt national monuments with their religious symbols to the exclusion of other religions, they endorse not only a particular religious idea, but also a lie, the lie that this is a Christian nation. And finally, the note about, you know, to the exclusion of other religions is a misunderstood phrase. American Atheist is being smart here because it's utterly impractical to allow the free expression expression of every potential view in a limited space, and that's one way to curtail this sort of religious favoritism. The proper application of the Establishment Clause as a matter of practicality is to simply disallow religious expression in this nature, because it will always have the effect of endorsing one religious view over another, or one type of religion over another, or religion over irreligion. However, after I posted that, Susan Jacoby had posted an article in the Washington Post on faith section, and the title was, Atheist Group's Frivolous Lawsuit Aims to Bar Cross from 9/11 Museum. And I read the title, and I was like, who the hell is this? And then I saw that it was Susan Jacoby, and I went, really? Because she's awesome. That alone taught me a lot about how I read things. But I don't presume that she can't be wrong, and I also don't presume that I can't be wrong. So I read what she wrote. And I think she has completely changed my mind. And that was a big deal.
Well, can you summarize her argument?
I mean, it sounded like you had some pretty good points.
I can. The 9/11 Museum is intended to reflect as much as possible about the varied ways in which New Yorkers responded, not only on that terrible day, but the following weeks and months. Yes, it would be a violation of the Establishment Clause if the battered cross-shaped object were displayed at the entrance as the museum's official symbol, and I'd be the first to go to court to get it removed. But there's no evidence that the museum intends this piece, when the building opens, to be anything but one exhibit in a large collection that will include many other objects belonging to the history of that day and its aftermath. It's now being installed in an underground section of the future museum. The museum will doubtless contain examples of the impromptu memorials that sprang up at Ground Zero and throughout Manhattan with pictures of the dead and missing, and that also contain many religious symbols. I saw many Stars of David and a few small statues of Buddha at those memorials in the weeks after the attack. Should they be eliminated too if there weren't enough symbols of other faiths and secular thinking? One of the key points that she made was that this is an impractical and potentially silly request. Why not make sure that the permanent collection of tax-supported museums contain a precisely equal number of paintings and pieces of sculpture so that all religious and non-religious beliefs will have artistic parity? Let's make sure there's one painting of the solar system for every painting of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. No, that wouldn't work, given that the Catholic Church enjoyed so many centuries of exclusive domain over what type of art and science were acceptable for discussion and public display. We're talking about history, albeit quite recent history, and the fact that some firefighters and mourners seized on this piece of metal as an object of veneration does not remove it from history. The object, I keep calling it that because to me it has no more spiritual significance than the face of Jesus that some people have seen in a grilled sandwich, is part of what New Yorkers lived through. It's not a statement of government endorsement of Christianity. What I find dismaying about the lawsuits of this kind is that they make it more difficult to focus public attention on real and serious violations of the separation of church and state. Essentially, her argument is, this is a legitimate piece of history surrounded in it, that's part of the bigger picture of what happened with regard to 9/11. It is not going to be the focal point official monument for the memorial. If it were, that would be objectionable and a violation. But as part of the bigger picture, there's no violation here. And I think she's convinced me. So I don't know what you guys had to think while I look for a file converter.
Well, maybe the crux of the whole issue, forgive the pun, would be
sure.
It would be what's the context this is going to be displayed in. I think if she's making a point that it's going to be pretty reasonable in the larger context as part of the bigger picture, and it's a part of history like other religious events and objects are part of history, then I'd have to agree. I think it really depends on the focus that it's given and of course the context. I think this is very interesting. I saw just the other night on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, he called out David Silverman for his comments about this lawsuit. And normally Jon Stewart's, I would categorize him as fairly atheist friendly. He's had people like Sam Harris on his show, but he was pretty he didn't hold back much. He basically accused him of being a dick over it.
So
And I thought he had a good point. I mean, David Silverman also said something that I thought was kind of just downright silly when he talked about something like installing a symbol of an atom there because we're made of atoms. And that didn't quite follow, I didn't think.
That's actually come up quite a lot. I mean, American Atheists and others have mm-hmm. used the atom symbol. I'm not even sure that we need any symbol, and it can come across as potentially silly. I'm not sure, Dave, I haven't talked to him about this particular comment. I don't know if he was actually being serious, because I'm pretty sure that he's smart enough to realize that if there's going to be any capitulation over this, it would have been the removal and not a, yes, you all get to put your stuff in there, you know, of equal size. That was the funny part of this.
I think that's just trying to draw attention to how silly it is that this is getting attention. It's like, well, then we just need to put everything on it. So, but anyway, about, like, the John Stewart thing and the author of that article that you read that I forgot her name.
Susan Jacoby.
Thank you, Susan.
Or maybe Jacoby. I always get it wrong.
Okay. Well, it's that being skeptics, it's such a blessing and a curse that we analyze everything that we ourselves do. And, you know, it keeps us honest and it keeps us focused on what the right thing is. But I feel like it can also prevent our, you know, moving forward and our ability to get stuff done. Because when we sit here and overanalyze everything... you know, it makes it seem like we are just the whole bunch of cats, and there's no reason to listen to us because we're not going to agree on anything anyway. So I feel like that's part of the reason why, as a minority, we're not really given any attention. That said, with the cross thing, I feel like there's been this whole push from Christianity to make this... to make the 9/11 stuff and then the resulting war into a holy war, and to say that they were attacking our Christianity, those Muslims over there were attacking our Christianity, and that putting this cross as, you know, a really big symbol and a really big of what happened there is kind of endorsing that holy war, you know, jihadist
kind of thing. Yeah, that whole mentality. Yeah, I think you're totally right. There's so much a subtext and baggage that comes with that. And I on occasion listen to various Christian talk radio and see what they have to say. And,
yeah.
And quite a few of them aren't shy at all about more or less outright attacking Islam. And of course, over the last 10 years and with the events in 9/11, that's gained a lot of traction.
Yeah, so I think that this is saying that, you know, you mess with us, we as Christians, we're going to rise from the rubble, and we'll get back at you.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know, this is one of those things where, you know, I sat down and thought about it. I have spent the last 10 years studying First Amendment issues and Supreme Court decisions and places where I'm convinced they got it right and some places where I think they got it wrong, like with the Texas Monument.
Sure.
I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an expert, but I do have enough of an understanding, at least with the way I think the First Amendment should be applied, in a way that makes sense, although that's not always the way the law works.
Sure.
And so when I see these cases come up, I tend to look at them and go, that's a good idea, that's a bad idea, oh, you're risking setting bad precedent, you know, you probably shouldn't be suing over this. This you're right about, but this is a PR nightmare. It's not a battle worth fighting, because even winning it, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
And when this one came up, my understanding was that this cross was going to be, you know, like the prominent thing in this memorial. And so I was immediately supportive of American Atheist lawsuits. Susan's comments have made me kind of reconsider, and now I'm kind of...
Right, it depends on the overall context.
Yeah, that's what I wrote on Facebook almost right off the bat, is she may have changed my mind. I want to see what the museum does with this. And so in that case, I think the correct time for the lawsuit might be after we see what the museum's done. However, there's an argument to be made
mm-hmm.
that by bringing the lawsuit early, or the threat of the lawsuit early, we can
sure.
change the museum's direction on this, so that even if they win... they and put the T-shaped girders in there, that it is in a context that is not a violation.
I think it's unfair to just call them T-shaped girders, because it's been viewed as a cross. It's been
sure.
immortalized as a cross. It's been in a church. This thing, I mean, it's like if I went around with a T-shaped necklace and I said, oh, no, it's not a cross. It's just,
yeah, for all intents and purposes, sure. what we're talking about is a cross.
It's a cross. I mean, even if we try and take that away, people are just going to be like, what are you talking about? That's dumb.
Yeah, if it had just been sitting there and nobody had adopted it in that sense, then it would be T-shaped girders.
Yes, but it has
But now
become,
that it has become this, it's mm-hmm. no different than somebody manufacturing it that way with intent.
It's like a cracker has become Jesus. 100%.
No. I'm not going to go so far as transubstantiation, okay. But you might be onto something in a different context.
All right.
But yeah, I don't think anybody's proposing that it literally became... Oh, that would be cool if, like, the molten slag drippings of this T-girder were being auctioned off as splinters of the one true cross. That would kind of be in the transubstantiation
line. There we go,
yeah. Oh, so I now have the audio from Russell's interview of our secret guest.
Our second secret guest.
Well, Beth was unexpected. This one was... because she's busy. This one was actually kind of expected.
Mm-hmm.
So if you guys... Oh, you have your headphones on. I was going to say, if you want to put your headphones on, you can hear it. Here's an interview that Russell did today. Even on days when he doesn't show up to nonprofits, he's doing stuff with us in mind, which is way more than I do. And, yeah. So here is...
I'd almost say he's with us in spirit.
Almost. Here is the interview.
Everybody, I'm Russell Glasser of the Nonprofits, and I am currently driving home with Ben Glasser. Ben?
Hi, I just got here back from Camp Quest. It was really fun.
Okay, so we're in Dallas. We just had dinner or lunch at the Taj Mahal restaurant, which was an okay Indian buffet. And we've got about 4 hours till we get back, so I thought this would be a great time to ask Ben. I know that everybody is really curious to hear what happens at Camp Quest, especially since, did you know that Matt had to dress up as a woman?
No. I never knew that.
Matt and a bunch of other people were raising money for Camp Quest, and Matt promised that if we got the most money, then if we got people to give us the most money, then he would dress up as a woman and be on the show. I'll show it to you later, okay?
Do we get to see him dress up as a woman?
Yeah, he already did it. I'll show you later.
Awesome!
Okay. Tell us what your camp experience was like.
It was fun.
What'd you guys do all week?
We went swimming. We went hiking. We didn't get to zip line, though, which was a bummer, but we at least got to go rock climbing.
Oh, that sounds like a blast. So, my understanding, is Camp Quest like an all-atheist camp or what?
Yeah, kind of.
Did they do any talking about God or religion during the week?
Not that much, but if they did, I'm not pissed, and I wasn't really paying attention.
Okay, well, one of the things I did notice was that when we got there, every building had a cross on it. What's that all about?
It was actually, they were actually renting a Christian camp.
Oh, well, I guess that was nice of the Christian camp to let the atheists come and invade their space for a week, huh?
Yeah.
So what else did you guys do? Was it mostly physical activity, or was there a lot of, like, intellectual stuff, learning and things like that?
More physical activity.
Well, what did you do you did learn about some stuff, right?
Yeah, there were these folders about everyday work, like fossils and stuff.
What about fossils?
We tried to find fossils of dinosaurs at this one place. And the three favorite ones, you had to write them down and how long they were and stuff.
Cool. How were the counselors? Were they fun to be with?
Yeah.
What was your counselor's name? Do you want to, he might listen to this show, so give him a shout out.
Zach.
Oh. Is there anything you'd like to say to Zach now that it's done?
Hello.
Great message. What did the, let's see. So you did normal camping stuff. Were there s'mores?
Yeah. But we had to do them inside because of the burn ban, so we just lit a fire in the fireplace.
Oh, that must have gotten pretty crowded. Was that the whole camp?
Yeah.
How about how many people would you guess were there?
I don't know, maybe like 100.
Huh, wow. So you're 9 years old. And you were in a camp full of other boys that were all the same age as you, or what?
The people in my cabin were like 9 and 10. But the other cabins were like 11 through 14 and stuff.
How many people were just in your cabin?
10.
Cool. What did you guys talk about when, late at night?
I'm not sure.
You said that there were a lot of Futurama fans in the group, huh?
Yeah, but it was mostly just one.
Oh, okay.
The other kids knew what the show was, and they watched, and they like it.
Did any of them watch The Atheist Experience?
I'm not sure.
I guess I'm running out of questions. Do you have anything else you'd want to say? If other parents are thinking about sending their kids to Camp Quest next year, what would you say?
I'm not sure.
Well, should they do it or shouldn't they?
They should.
So Camp Quest was a great week for you, huh?
Yeah, it was fun.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ben Glasser, and we'll throw this up on the nonprofit site when we can. Bye.
Bye-bye, people.
Wow. All right.
Ben was obviously coached.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. That was so slick.
Well, thank you, Russell, for uploading that. And
that was cool.
To Ben for giving us a riveting report of Camp Quest.
It sounded like you had a great time.
Yeah, fossils and rock climbing and swimming and Futurama and...
Come on, no ghost stories? No ghost stories around
no
the campfire?
No anti-ghost stories?
I will
there
say
was this
that...
one time I thought I saw a ghost, yeah. But it really wasn't.
I will say that, Russell, don't do that while you're driving next time.
I get on him about that.
There's not only the background noise, but it would be nice to get you both home safely. And hey, we got a restaurant review amidst all the other things
in
there.
It was okay.
It was an okay Indian place. So
get value for them.
Oh, yeah. Hey, my computer's going to make noise at me when it's not supposed to. So no, I don't want to save that.
Right. Well, I'm glad that it was worth it dressing up like a girl.
Absolutely.
And...
As I mentioned before, it was...
Glad you got to do it. Glad you got an excuse to do it.
Yeah, it was something that I'd wanted to do anyway. I'm very happy that it went to a good cause. Our group raised a little over 15 grand in total in combination with PZ. It was over 30. For 30 grand, I'll dress up pretty much like whatever you want. Especially if it's 30 grand to send kids to summer camp. Which I loved as a kid. I went to Christian summer camps and had a blast. But... looking back on it, the things that I enjoyed, mm-hmm. the boating, the swimming, the jumping off of rocks, the running around doing projects and crafty things, then at night and in the morning and at different times, you would be going to church services.
Yeah, I remember I had to do that too.
So,
yeah, my experience with summer camp was basically it was sponsored by church, and I don't remember a whole lot. I think they pretty much soft-pedaled that stuff. I guess. I got lucky, but yeah, I remember all the fun stuff too.
Oh, yeah. And boy, we did all kinds of stuff, and we were rotten. And
we definitely had outdoor fire involved too.
Yeah,
all that stuff we can't do now.
Oh, that's lucky. You know, my
burn
camp,
bans and PC parents.
My camp pretty much sucked. It was just the church every day, and then study groups, and then.
So it was like vacation Bible school.
Yeah.
With even less fun than that. But anyway, it doesn't necessarily have to be. And by the way, Camp Quest isn't an atheist camp, and there's not this brainwashing thing. If anything, I would say it's a science skepticism adventure camp. And what they've done is they've taken traditional summer camps, ripped out the churches would do, ripped out all of the church bits, and put in sciencey education things and made it fun. We've watched the Camp Quest folks at the Freethought conventions. They run a special, you know, daycare thing for kids where they get to play with, you know, non-Newtonian fluids and all kinds of stuff that I wish I'd have gotten to do when I was a kid. And also...
Yeah, it's not particularly anti-religious in any way. And I'm sure, and even some, you know, I think even some Christian families send their kids there. They could, in theory.
Yeah, there's no, you know... religion bashing in it. Also, in addition to Camp Quest running along at conventions and things like this, Texas Freethought Convention coming up, at TAM, Richard Dawkins announced that his foundation will be providing daycare at these conventions in addition as well. And so, you know, kudos to him for that. Look forward to meeting and talking to him at the Texas Freethought Convention, where there will be daycare as well as Camp Quest stuff. A couple of quick things. On the last show, I talked a little bit about the amazing meeting, and I didn't get to go, so I was going off of reports from people. And I went into kind of a long rant about this problem in skepticism that I've gone over many, many times relating to accommodationism and, you know, does skepticism have something to say about religion? I'm not going to rehash that at all. But I would like to say that by all reports from everybody who actually went, this year's TAM was much improved in every regard, and the incident that I was talking about where DJ had called for more religious diversity in the skeptics movement was the only incident along those lines, and so it looks like things are improving. And on reflection, there's one connotation in which I would definitely agree with DJ's comment, even though I don't I'm not under the impression from the people who saw it or the people on the panel that this is what was intended. But there is a context in which I would agree that we need more religious diversity in skepticism, and that is that we need to make skepticism appealing to people of all religious beliefs so that they can apply those tools of skepticism to their religious beliefs and embrace reality in all of its glory and, you know, not protect any beliefs. But by and large, all reports show that TAM was a big improvement. We've talked before about the Rock Beyond Belief concert that was on again, off again.
Is there a lineup for that?
Sergeant Justin Griffith is now the... he's been a member of the Military Atheists and Secular Humanists, but now he's the military representative, military spokesperson for American Atheists, taking over for Kathy Johnson, who is the vice president of American Atheists and was basically wearing a couple different hats. And so
she came down and was on the show a little while ago, right?
Or was that she came down for a talk, a lecture.
Okay.
Oh, nice time for a sneeze. You couldn't have talked for 2 seconds more? So, quick notes. It's back on at Fort Bragg. There was a concert staged by the Billy Graham Evangelical Association, received more than $50,000 in financial support from the base. And after some battles, it looks like Rock Beyond Belief is back on. It was originally slated to be last April. And it looks like it's scheduled for March 31st, 2012, and will be free to all members of the military, their families, and the public. It's slated to feature musical groups and speakers, including Richard Dawkins, a best-selling author and prominent atheist, which obviously I was reading that from somewhere, because I don't presume that most of our readers don't know who Dawkins is. Oh.
Dan Barker's going to be there, too.
Oh, cool.
Quite a few. Nathan Phelps. Interesting.
I'm glad they finally get to do this.
Yeah, it's nice that this may have a decent outcome, but it's frustrating that it took so long and had to jump through so many hoops.
Yeah, it did take a long time.
So this is the last thing I have to announce. So I don't know what else you guys have got to kind of close out the show. But tomorrow is the ACA's regular lecture series. Tomorrow being Sunday, August 7th. At noon at the Austin History Center, located at the corner of 9th and Guadalupe, or Guadalupe. The guest is going to be Brett Buchanan, who is a photographer and has been involved with the ACA off and on for a year or so at least. He's going to talk about Beyond the Reach, a look inside the FLDS. So it's very timely, given Warren Jeffs' conviction. But Beth arranged this and dealt with Brett. And Beth has actually walked back into the room as if she's psychic and knows what I'm talking about. So go ahead.
Yes, I sense whenever you're talking about the FLDS, since that's my big thing right now. Yeah, I got back from Hobby Lobby. It was fun.
Congratulations.
You know, I've never been to a Hobby Lobby.
Well, there's one right by the house. You should go. It's wonderful.
Well.
Well, maybe. I don't really have any hobbies that need lobbying.
And I have strong objections to Hobby Lobby.
Yeah, the guys in the room are already dying here.
They're not only a strongly Christian organization.
Are they really? Well, then I think I'll take a pass.
Oh, yeah.
They even have a book for sale up there from, like, the creator of Hobby Lobby that right on the cover misrepresents the Founding Fathers in order to make the Christian Nation argument.
Wow.
However, and I tend to go to, like, Joanne or Michael or things like that more, but for some things, unfortunately, you can't beat Hobby Lobby, and so I will give them their $2 or whatever.
It's absolutely the best craft store there is, except AC Moore, which we don't have in Texas. But, yeah, what was I talking about? Oh, Brett. Yes, this is going to be a wonderful thing that everybody near Austin should come out to. He actually met a woman who is a survivor of the FLDS. I forgot her name. But they go back to the old school, the old compound. He takes a lot of pictures. He talks a lot about it. And it's just going to be absolutely wonderful.
Thank you for taking a moment away from the Hobby Lobby show to talk about tomorrow's lecture. I don't know. Does anybody have any last-minute news items to get out before we close this up?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up something that I read on Ken Ham's blog.
Oh,
and
boy.
I wasn't going to go here because I mined his blog last time. But this one was just too rich. He seems to spend about as much time on his blog when attacking other religious groups that don't believe his version of biblical literalism as much as he does crowing about the Creation Museum.
Yeah, because he got banned from some conventions.
Yeah, he got a homeschool convention, turned him away. Him and BioLogos go at it. Theistic evolution, anybody who buys into that is almost as bad as an atheist in his book. But in particular, in one of his latest blog entries here, he calls out a Kentucky pastor, Pastor Joseph Phelps, no relation to the Phelps family of God Hates Fags claim.
Okay.
He quotes this pastor as saying, "I honor anyone who has a different understanding of creation than I or our church might have." Then he goes on to claim he's in receipt of an exchange of letters between this pastor and an AIG Answers in Genesis supporter, where basically in the letter, this pastor states that the Ark Encounter and the Creation Museum in general promote, quote, a religious theme that runs counter to all intelligent understandings of this earth. To which I say, duh.
Yeah.
But then he goes on to say how this is a sad compromise, how that he is, in fact, very intelligent, and his supporter, whom the letter was addressed to, is an airline pilot and very professional and intelligent himself.
Sure.
And I think this is very interesting. This goes on to show kind of a schism, to some degree, between biblical literalists and those who consider themselves Christians or God believers, but still take evolution and other scientific understandings at face value. And I think this kind of touches on a subject that I think is very interesting. And personally, my own belief on it, as I think I have a certain amount of respect, a very, very compartmentalized amount of respect for biblical literalists like Ken Ham, who kind of realize that if you don't take it all literally, the house of cards will come tumbling down.
Sure, it's I've commented the same on like the Phelpses. I mean, at least they're aware of the problem with violating the internal consistency.
Right, right. Whereas others who either resort to theistic evolution or they believe, okay, evolution, the earth is millions of years old, and this doesn't necessarily what our scientific reckoning understanding of the earth's history does not reconcile at all with with the Bible. They have some level of dissonance, of cognitive dissonance, that lets them hold these views simultaneously, and they simply don't reconcile them. They just let them kind of fester, I guess. And to some degree, I certainly wouldn't want everybody to be a biblical literalist, but like I said, I have a certain amount of respect for people who respect that, you know, you either have to maintain your internal consistency or else you're violating that.
Well, you're in the same boat that I am, and that we're respecting two different things, and when we say we respect them, in neither case are we saying that this is the position that we would advocate holding. But the literalists are at least recognizing the problems with violating the internal consistency. However, those who have violated the internal consistency have, by and large, done it for good reasons. They have considered evidence and reestablished their position based on the evidence. And I'm at least optimistic that those people, as the evidence continues to bear out for reality, will be forced someday to reconsider what they believe and why, and abandon those beliefs and you know, discard the last remnants of their religion as well. But, you know, so I can find something to respect in almost anybody, except for those people who exercise kind of this, not just willful ignorance, but gleefully exercise willful ignorance and encourage it in others. That to me is just about as vile as you can get. The idea that the evidence coming from the world that you inhabit is so disconcerting that you must not only deny it and play ignorant to it, but that you want to encourage this same behavior in others. It's the most...
And positively revel in it.
Yeah, it's crippling. It retards progress, everything. But so, yeah, good point.
I have for Kinham, because every time I look at their site, I'm just reminded of the shit ton of money that organization pulls in, and that they're going on to fund the Ark Encounter, that they have the money to do that. It's just absolutely staggering that the people just simply, and they don't earn this money. They just collect it.
Yeah. I can't wait to see the Ark, though.
It's fascinating.
The actual dimensions of the Ark, and then compare that to how many animals are supposed to fit inside. I think that building the Ark is kind of a mistake.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, it very well may be. People walk up and go, really? That's it?
There's no way.
I mean, you know, it's big, but I've seen aircraft carriers, and they only hold about 6,000 people or so.
Yeah, all right. So,
great. So we made it through an hour without Dennis here for our introduction, and we almost made it without Russell, but fortunately he was able to basically fire away a remote interview to help the
He's a resourceful guy. Show.
So that's about it. Tomorrow, as a reminder, there's the lecture and the Atheist Experience and a bunch of other stuff going on. Don't forget about the Texas Freethought Convention. You should probably start thinking about registering soon as opportunities are closing.
Yeah, I'm putting mine in this weekend.
And the ACA Bat Cruise, for more information, you can go to www.atheist-community.org. And there's links up there so that you can start registering for our Bat Cruise on October 1st. We look forward to seeing you, and we anticipate that the nonprofits will be back possibly next week, but there is a slim chance that it will be another 2-week gap.
We like to keep you guessing.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll do what we can. Anyway, we'll leave you with Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer in honor of Texas Governor Rick Perry, who clearly hasn't got one.